Shalom, Master. And welcome to everybody else who's joining us for the 84th episode of Extreme Makeover Temple Edition, the study of Hilchos Beis HaBechira. Okay. I'm really excited about today's class because when I started to prepare this class, something didn't make any sense to me. Namely, the Rambam began the 8th chapter of Hilchot Beit HaBechira by telling us about this honor guard. We spent a lot of time analyzing the intention of the Torah. What is God actually asking for? What is the purpose of this honor guard that's only performed at night? It doesn't just seem to be guarding anything. And we developed this incredible thesis, right? The Rebbe sheds this amazing light that it's about mindfulness and it's about being present, and that the Beis HaMikdash is never alone. And that the Levites took a position in 21 places. And the Kohanim take a position in 3 places. And in the Mishnah, it begins by narrating where the Levites are, and the Rambam reverses that, very possibly because the Kohanim are a higher level of mindfulness. The Rambam introduces it not on a technical level, but on a much deeper level. And it's about doorways and corners. Right? You have to mind the corners, and you have to be present at the doorway. And then, after talking about the gateways or doorways to the Har HaBayit and the corners, that was 2 episodes ago. In our last episode, we analyzed the gateways directly into the Azara, the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash itself. And we had already talked about the difference between them being stationed inside versus outside. And the obvious question is that there are 7 gates, not 5 gates. We discussed all this. And then the Rambam wraps it up and he says, okay, so we have 18. Because we have 5 doors, 5 gateways, and the Har HaBayit that are being minded by Levites. 5 gateways that are being minded by Levites in the actual scrimmage of the Azara, as depicted in the pictures that are right here. But we talked about this, and I encourage anybody who is even a little bit lost, just go back and watch the previous episodes. It's not fair to everybody else to repeat everything every time. And then we have 4 corners. In the Har HaBayit area, you're inside the corner. And when it comes to the Azara, you mind the corners on the outside, as we explained. So 5 and 5 is 10, 4 and 4 is 8. And it gives you the sum total of 18 chai. Yeah, but there's 21 places. Ah, so the Rambam now in a different halacha, in a separate halacha, we finished halacha chet, we divided halacha chet over 2 episodes. Now in halacha tes, the Rambam says, oh, right, ve'od shomrim belishkat hakorban. You know what? The Levim, they were also maintaining guard in some of the chambers. There was this chamber watch. They had these chamber duties. So there was a chamber called Korban, an offering chamber. And then there's Lishkat HaParochet. Then there's the office or the control center for the curtains. And then there's Achorei Beit HaKaporet. Then there's not Lishkat, but Achorei Beit HaKaporet. Like, and the Rambam doesn't tell us, by the way, this is 3. He simply tells us that ve'od, it's like, and in addition to the doors and the corners, ve'od, and furthermore, there were some chambers that were being minded as well. And I'm like, what in heaven is going on here? Why did the Rambam divide these 3 locations from the previous 18 locations? You know, if anything, if there should have been a division, we should have divided between the Har HaBayit, which is 1 level of sanctity, and the Azara, the courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash, which is a totally different level of sanctity. That's a biblical division. The locations we're talking about now are all Azara oriented, as we're going to learn. They're all connected to the outer perimeter of the Azara itself. In fact, one could argue that they're a step down in sanctity, because the doorway to the Azara actually opens into the Azara, into the courtyard. And the corners of the Azara have to be minded from the outside, because you're minding the holiness that's on the inside. And these are locations, offices, chambers that are on the outer perimeter, as we're going to learn. So my head starts exploding. I don't understand what's going on over here. I'm like, Rabbeinu Shalalem, what does this mean? What was the Rambam trying to tell us by dividing this into a separate halacha? But not only he divides it into a separate halacha, he opens the halacha by saying, the ode, and in addition to what? To doors and corners? Like, what inherent difference is there between doors and corners and offices? These are places where the Levites would fulfill a duty by minding the Beis HaMikdash. And the more I thought about this, the more it was, it's just like, absolutely overwhelming me. So I decided I'm going to have to just learn this, just learn the pshat, understand what it's talking about. And then kind of something dawned on me. Based on everything we've learned up until this point, it hit me, and I'm really excited to share it with you. And I think we have stumbled upon something absolutely stupendous. And it fits beautifully with the diukim, with the precise analysis of the language that the Rambam uses. But maybe I'm wrong, I don't know. This is just a supposition. I'm going to teach you Torah to the best of my ability. This is the way I understand it, and I pray to Hashem that I'm right. Okay, so let's take it from the top. Now that I've shared the questions with you, I've articulated the issues, I think the issues are very clear. Let's just, before we actually delve into these issues, let's try to understand what the Rambam is actually saying himself. So the ode, in addition to the 18 locations, here's the other three, that's going to give us a sum total of 21, which, by the way, he never tallies up. And he only tallies the 18, which is so strange. Void. Shoimrim belishka sakorban. They're guarding at the lishka of the korban. So here's the interesting thing. A little bit of research directed me back to Mesechet Tamid. And in Mesechet Tamid, on Daf Chavov Amud Beis, page 26, side B, the Mefarash, which is this anonymous medieval commentary, brilliant, holy, insightful, off the charts commentary, that's printed in the Talmud. We don't have Rashi in Masechet Talmud. He says like this. He talks about the different places where the Levites will fulfill their sacred guard duty. And he actually addresses some of the issues we talked about yesterday. He talks about that area. And he says it seems to indicate that was Levites on the bottom and Kohanim on the top. And he said, that doesn't work. Because then you end up with 22 locations. And our tradition is that they were 21 locations. And as we learned a number of episodes ago, that's actually biblical. It comes from sources in the Torah itself. So the Mefarash says like this. Echad belishkat ha-korban. One is in the office of the korban. I'm using the word lishka in a very broad way. In today's modern vernacular, lishka means office. It could mean chamber also. The office or chamber of the offering, the korban. Be'oto lishka, in that chamber, Nitonim korbanot hamivukarim. That's where we place the offerings that have already been checked. Okay, so let me give you some background. The Torah tells us that an offering that's brought, an animal offering that is, this applies also to grain offerings and libations as well, the offering has to be perfect. Tamim tihiyu l'ratzon. The Torah says in order for it to be brought, it must be absolutely wholesome. It's not missing anything. It's not spoiled in any way. a perfect specimen. So the animals had to be carefully checked. Here's a silly joke to illustrate my point. They tell the story that a woman comes to the butcher shop and she wants to buy some drumsticks, some pulkas. And she says to the butcher, "Butcher," she says, "this drumstick is broken." And the butcher says, "Lady, you want to dance with the chicken or you want to eat the chicken?" Like, do you think that with the exception of maybe thoroughbred horses being prepared for a race, or maybe an animal that's being presented at some kind of state fair, do you think that the animals are combed and cleaned? I mean, maybe some royal parade has gleaming steeds, but does the average horseback rider go and check his horse to see if it has any warts? I mean, really, who cares? As long as the horse can gallop, that's good enough. Who cares if the cow who is going to give me milk or the ox who's going to pull my plow has got some kind of blemish? The answer is people who plow fields or milk cows or ride horses don't care. Now, the whole animal offering thing is beyond our ability to comprehend altogether anyway, so I'm not even going to try to, you know, like kind of explain or give it any rational parameters, but the Torah says that the animal has to be perfect. And if somebody brings an imperfect animal to Hashem, it's a grave sin on multiple levels. By the way, even dashing the blood of an animal that was imperfect is a violation of the Torah. And the blood certainly doesn't look any different if the animal had a wart or a scratch or some kind of blemish. So the animals had to be very, very carefully checked. Very carefully checked. Who would do this? Invariably, this is a kind of strange or even poetic, but the Kohanim, who had blemishes themselves and were thusly prevented from serving in the Beis HaMikdash, they would be on the back end. So they weren't the waiters in gleaming whites who were serving the food, but they were the kitchen help behind the scenes, making sure that the materials used were of the finest nature. And we're going to learn, I'm going to share with you from the Rambam himself, that in this chamber, there were never less than 6 animals ready to go. We always had to be 3 days ahead of ourselves. Talk about organized. Animals had already been selected, and animals had already been carefully checked. You're talking like on a vet table. You're talking people with loving care to carefully comb through each and every detail of this animal, from his nose to his tail to the tiny details of the hooves. Everything has to be right, and the animal is taken care of. We make sure the animal's in perfect shape. A stunning specimen. So the Mefarash says that in this lishka called the korban, they would place korbanot hamavukarim, the animals who had already been checked. Vahu chutz la'azara, this is outside of the courtyard. Vishar hayala, it had a gate. It had a gate. So we're not even sure what exactly that means, where the gate was, because I need to tell you where this lishka was. This lishka, the Rambam, in the 5th chapter of Beit HaBechira, we learned this together. In the 10th halacha, the Rambam tells us that there was this gigantic place called Beit HaMoked. I'm going to show you over here. That's the large domed building, kind of like a dormitory for Kohanim. And there was a constant fire burning. It's a very large, cavernous building, and there was a fire burning on the lower level. Here, on this side, is an example of what that would look like in what you would call maybe an architectural drawing rendering. Not detailed, but just like a floor plan. So you'll see in this floor plan, this black circle represents the dome, Beit HaMoked, a large domed building. And these white squares represent four different chambers. So it's a very large room, and the lower level has four different chambers. By the way, there's a whole labyrinth that goes beneath this as well, but that's in a different episode. So the Rambam tells us that two of these chambers were Kodesh, and two of them were Chol. Two of these chambers were considered to be in the sacred scrimmage, and two outside the sacred scrimmage. Now, it doesn't show it well here in this picture, but it seems that this building was kind of built into the wall of the actual Azara. And as such, it says that there were lines, or just little markers, going across this room, indicating which half of this large chamber was sacred as part of the Azara, and which was not. And it was sacred by virtue of this doorway. So the holiness would spill out through the doorway, and its line of scrimmage would be with little markers halfway through. Here was a door that opened into the Har HaBayit, or the Chel. And so this doorway and its half were not sacred. And the Rambam tells us, Umehayu Mishamshot. I'm reading from the fifth chapter of Hilchot Beit HaBechira. I'm reading from the tenth halacha. What did they use these chambers for? So the Rambam talks about, the first one he talks about is Ma'aravit Dromit. We're talking about the southwest. Where is southwest? Well, it's actually easy to discover. We learned that the Beit HaMikdash, the Mikdash proper, is in the south. So this is south, and that's east. As we talked about in yesterday's episode, this will be the north. Pardon me, this is the south, and that side is the north. The Mizbeach is in the south. The area of the Shechita, where the animals would be slaughtered and later butchered, is in the north. So if we're talking about southwest, we talk about this corner. In this corner, it says there is a gate. Where's that gate taking you into? Now, we learned yesterday that animals, which are called Kodshei Kodoshim, are brought in through this doorway, and they're taken straight to the butchering area. However, it seems that the Korbanot Tmidim, the dailies, the daily double, a korban every morning, tamid shel shachar, and tamid shel bein harbayim, a korban brought each morning that initiated the daily temple services, and each evening, which concluded the temple services. So they had to have six animals already checked, but then we're going to learn soon that there was actually another two animals. So the animals had been checked 4 days prior. In addition to today's offerings, we were already prepared, not one, not two, but 3 days ahead of today. So we're always, if you will, we don't just have a batter at deck, we have a whole lineup, a full lineup. And it was checked before it was entered in, and then it was checked on the day when it was going to be brought as a korban. So actually it had been checked 3 days earlier, and on the fourth day it would be checked again, which is the day of its actual offering. So this is the chamber. And it seems that there might have been some kind of doorway here, although it's not depicted. That's what the Mefarish seems to say. Because he talks about some kind of doorway. Obviously, you have to have, every chamber has a doorway. How'd you get in there? Some kind of magical entrance? It can't just be talking about the fact that it has a doorway. It says, Hoyo lo shar, it had a doorway. Now, it doesn't really say to where this doorway went to, but it says it had a doorway. The Shar Hayala, it had a doorway. Perhaps there was some kind of small passageway that took it into the actual Azara. Perhaps. I don't know this, but he says it has a doorway. And what happened there? So this was called, Rambam says, Lishkas Hatuloim. He says it's called the chamber of lambs, young lambs, yearling lambs. And then he says, here, that's where they made the showbreads, lechem apanim. And we talked about the other two, what the other two were for. So here's my first question. My first question that I ask myself is, okay, so there was a doorway. The Rambam omits mentioning that, but the Mefarish clearly says there was a doorway. So what? So what if there's a doorway? Why was there a doorway? What was even the point of that? And then the second thing which struck me as odd is that the Rambam himself in the fifth chapter, when he describes this chamber, he calls it Lishkat Hatla'im. When we go forward to the laws called Tmidim Umusafin, the regular offerings and the additional offerings, in the first chapter, in the ninth halacha, the Rambam says, Ein pochasin mishisha tla'im hamavukarim. We do not have less than six lambs that are already carefully checked in the Lishkat Hatla'im Shebe Migdash. In the Lishkat Hatla'im. So he says, he calls it Lishkat Hatla'im. So twice the Rambam calls this in the laws of Beit HaBechira itself in the fifth chapter. He calls it Lishkat Hatla'im when he identifies it. He calls it the office of the lambs. And then later on, when he speaks about the specifics of these daily offerings of the lambs, he calls it the Lishkat Hatla'im as well. And for some reason, in the eighth chapter of Beit HaBechira, where the Rambam is talking about the Levites and their guard duty, he calls it Lishkat HaKorban. Why? Now it's very clear that this Lishkat HaKorban is talking about the Lishkat HaTlaim, or so it seems. I mentioned to you earlier that there were six carefully checked lambs. That's what the Rambam tells us. But the Tosfos in Mesechet Er Arachin, on page 13, and this is also brought down by the Aruch HaShulchan, he says clearly that in addition to the six lambs, there was an additional two who had already been taken several days earlier, and they were going to be used for the Korbanot today. So besides today's Korbanot, there were six Korbanot in the waiting. And therefore, as the Bartanura says in Mesechet Arachin, when a Korban would be brought, he was already mivukar, already checked and carefully prepared, arba'a yamim, 4 days prior. Because by the time we got to bringing those two animals as the Korbanot, on their day of Korban, they had already been in the Lishkat HaTlaim for 3 days. So what's going on over here? Why does the Rambam call it Lishkat HaKorban? Very strange. When we take a look at the Bartanura on Masechet Midot, he talks about, the Mishnah identifies the concept of Lishkat HaKorban. The Mishnah also uses the language of Lishkat HaKorban, which is interesting. The Mishnah doesn't call it Lishkat HaTlaim, even though the Rambam does. Now, the Rambam many, many times will change from the language of the Mishnah if, for whatever reason, he finds the language of the Gemara or something else, that, like a Tosefta, that's more expedient. Although Tamid doesn't have a Tosefta. But very interestingly, the Rambam elsewhere calls it always Lishkat HaTlaim. Here he refers to it as Lishkat HaKorban. The Bartanura doesn't really comment. He doesn't say anything about it. And even the Tosfos Yom Tov seems to go mum over this. He has no comment on the idea that it's called Lishkat HaKorban. Okay, so in the commentary of the Rosh, which is found in Masechet Midot, something very interesting shows up here. The Rosh says the following. Lishkat HaKorban, he Lishkat HaTlaim, it's the same place. The chamber of lambs, the chamber of offerings, the lambs are offerings. That's what the Rosh says. That's what Rabbeinu Osher says. And he says, Inami, you know, perhaps the fact that the Mishnah used different language here and called it Lishkat HaKorban rather than Lishkat HaTlaim indicates that Lishka Haya Miyuchedet Levaker Ba HaKorbanot Mimumin. That there was a special Lishka a special office, if you will, or a special chamber in which they would actually perform the careful checking or analysis of the animal. In other words, there were two parts of this chamber. There was the animal pen, if you will, where the animals were kept, the kennel. And then there was like the vet's office, where the animal might have been placed on some kind of table, making the animal comfortable, making sure the animal didn't get hurt. And they would carefully check, gently check the animal in this place. And that was a separate area, it seems. So what's the upshot? There's something different going on here. This isn't merely this chamber. It's a specific part of this chamber. A part of the chamber in which the Kohanim would actively check the animals. And I've never checked animals for blemishes. I don't think I ever will. I'm not a Kohen, but something tells me that it was a very tedious and careful process, when it didn't happen quickly. I have a feeling that the Kohanim there were probably on a veterinarian grade, and they probably checked the animals very thoroughly. It's a busy place. Six animals. They're always checking. There's always activity happening there during the day. I think this is the key, by the way. Activity happening during the day. People doing something. Kohanim active during the day in an adjunct area of the actual Azara itself. Let's put that on the back burner for a second. And let's go back to the Rambam. Second location. Lishkat HaParochet. The chamber of the curtains. The curtain control center. What is that? What's the curtain control center? I mean, there were a lot of different chambers and offices and rooms in the Beis HaMikdash. It's a massive campus. We learned many an episode ago that the entire building of the Beit HaMikdash was surrounded by chamber after chamber after chamber, and yet we don't hear anything about Levium being positioned there. For some reason, when it came to the curtain chamber, oh, now we have to have Levium that are present. So the Mefarish tells us something very interesting. The Mefarish says, Ve'echad belishkat parochet, one is in the lishka, the area of the parochet, Sham hayu nashim orgot et haparochet. There, the woman would weave the curtains. The woman would weave the curtains. He doesn't tell us what happens in the other places. Here he makes a point of saying the woman would weave the curtains. Now, incidentally, the female talent of weaving and Beit HaMikdash artifact goes back to the Mishkan itself. For whilst Moshe Rabbeinu had appointed Bezalel and Oholiab, who were two men, to be responsible for the fabrication of the various artifacts and the actual skeletal area of the Mishkan itself, a key component in the Mishkan was tapestries and curtains. And that was entirely in the hands of these amazingly talented Jewish women. And it seems that this persisted. Centuries and centuries later, millennia later, there's women who are occupied with this very important work of creating these curtains. What does that even mean? What's going on here? Well, let's take a look in the Rambam, in the laws of Kalei HaMikdash. The Rambam tells us that in the second Beit HaMikdash, Yud Gimel Parochot Hayab HaMikdasheni. We don't know about the first Beit HaMikdash. But in the second Beit HaMikdash, we had no less than 13 curtains. By the way, curtains are an act of separation. As Rashi tells us in his commentary in Parashat Truma. But interestingly, it's 13, which is the gematria of Echad. guess sometimes by keeping our distance, we're able to achieve that oneness. You have to respect the boundaries, and then we can achieve the oneness with Hashem. I'm just saying that. I don't know if that means anything. At any rate, there were 13 parochot. Where? So 7, he says, were on Sha'arei Ha'azara. That means over the golden, the gleaming golden gates, there was a large, enormous tapestry that hung. And the tapestry kind of covered or protected the gold-plated doors themselves. We learned yesterday that there were 7 of those gates. Only 2 of them were, 5 were minded by Levites and 2 were minded by the Kohanim, but there were 7 in total. Then there is one al petach ha'ulam. That's the door of the foyer to the actual Migdash structure. One is on petach ha'ichal. One is at the door of the actual structure, which is already inside. Shtayim ledvir. Then there were 2 for the Holy of Holies. The Dvir is considered the Kodesh HaKadoshim, and we learned in the second Beit HaMikdash, we were unsure of where to place a particular Amma, a particular wall, where the Kodesh would end and Kodesh HaKadoshim would begin, and as such, we'd have 2 curtains. And in that way, whichever curtain was supposed to be the end of one and beginning of the other, it would be either of the 2, and the Amma, the cubit in the middle, was kind of an uncertain commodity. So there were 2 hanging, a cubit apart. These were enormous, enormous curtains. You could just go back to the previous episodes and find out how big an area we're talking about. Enormous curtains. And then we learned in the previous episode that the Beit HaMikdash has 2 floors here. So when you see a Kodesh inside here, this is all those dark areas, those chambers I talked about. When you see an area here and a division, here you can see the 2 curtains actually, you see 2 lines. When you see that division, on the upper level was a replication of that space, and it was also divided by 2 curtains. So you add it up and you get a sum total of 13. That's a lot of curtains. A lot of curtains. And it's not unreasonable to suggest that they were always working on a curtain. They didn't wait until something went wrong. They were always working on curtains and constantly replacing the curtains. There were hundreds of thousands of people who thronged through the Beis HaMikdash, and invariably a curtain that is being touched by many people is going to eventually start to disintegrate. It's just fabric. So they were always working on creating new curtains. So this is an area of the Beis HaMikdash that's a beehive of activity. It's not the Kohanim. It's not the Korbanot. But it's a beehive of activity. There are always women weaving a curtain. There's never a time when textiles aren't being created or fabricated. Very, very high end, I'll say gorgeous, artistic textiles. And that's my second key. So we're talking about a place that was not actual Beit HaMikdash courtyard, not actual avodah, but a place where there was a beehive of constant activity. So that's key 2. And we'll come back to this. Let's take a look at the commentary of the Rosh. The Rosh says, Lishkat haparochet, shahoyu orgim ba haparochet. He says, that's where they would weave the fabric, the textiles of these curtains. Very interestingly, in the commentaries on the Mishnah, once again, we hear nothing. No mention. But the Rosh points out, and the Mefarash points out in Tumid and Midot respectively, that we're speaking about the place where the weaving was happening. Now, let's complete this halacha in the Rambam. V'achore Beit HaKaporet. Outside of the house of the cover. The house of the cover. What's the house of the cover? That's a good question. Well, the house of the cover is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. How do I know? Well, I'm glad you asked. I know because that's what we read in the commentary in the Mishnah. Beit HaKaporet, here we have a Tosfos Yom Tov. Tosfos Yom Tov in the Mishnah says that Beit Kodesh HaKadashim is Nikra, is called Beit HaKaporet. The house of the Holy of Holies is called Kaporet. Why? What is a house of a cover? So he says, Va'al Shem Shesham HaKaporet Bikruvim Litavnit HaMerkava, because that's where the cover of the ark that had the cherubim, the angelic cherubim, that's where they were. I'm thinking, so strange, because this Mishnah is talking, we would think, about the second Beit HaMikdash. Because there are details here that we don't know of in the first Beit HaMikdash. And yet, we're calling it Beit HaKaporet, the house of the cover, but there was neither ark nor tablets, nor cover and cherubim in the second Beit HaMikdash. That had all already been hidden away deep in a labyrinth in the waning years of the first Beit HaMikdash. And we learned about that together in this very series. So the Mishnah has no problem calling it Kodesh HaKadoshim all the time. Why suddenly this enigmatic name? And strangely enough, the Rambam follows suit. He's using the language of the Mishnah here. The Rambam does not necessarily use the language of the Mishnah. He uses the language that's clearest and most expedient to make his point. Why would the Rambam insist on calling it Beit HaKaporet? The Mefarash, a Masechet Tamid, says, Echod Belishkat Achore Beit HaKaporet. He adds the word chamber. Now, we're talking about behind this building, which isn't really depicted in this picture. Here, if you look at it here, we're talking about some chamber immediately behind the Holy of Holies. Here we have an imaginary ark where it would have been placed. Behind the Holy of Holies, there's a chamber, and we're talking about a Levite station right here. Why in heaven is a Levite station there? Like, what's going on? Why are we calling it Beit HaKaporet? The Rosh, Rabbeinu Asher, he also uses the word Lishka, very interestingly. He says, Achore Beit HaKaporet, he says, Lishka Achat Haita B'Ma'arav. There was a chamber due west of the Beis HaMikdash. Velul katan bekotel ma'aravi. There's a tiny opening. A lul is a very small opening, almost like a vent that opened, and that was behind the Beis HaMikdash. Petucha for, says the Rosh, Mikodesh HaKadashim, opened from the Holy of Holies, Le'ota HaLishka. So the Holy of Holies had a vent, a physical vent that opened into this Lishka. V'HaLishka Haita Ptucha Le'evra. Pardon me, La'azara. This Lishka has a direct link, actual space, like a hole. A hole that goes into the Azara, into the courtyard. So here, there's a hole here, a vent. And that vent ventilates out here. And the vent actually opens here to the courtyard. What's ventilation about? What's going on over here? So the Rosh says, this is Lahakshir Achore Beit HaKaporet L'Shchitat Kadashim. This is to permit, to make suitable, this side of the Azara for the offering of korbanot. So, for example, a korban Pesach, which could be slaughtered anywhere in the Azara, could be slaughtered anywhere in the scrimmage, including back here. And the Rosh says, "V'karinan be petach olmoid." It's called the doorway. It's called a gateway. It may be nothing more than a little vent, a ventricle, a small hole. But nonetheless, it's called a door for the Ohel Moed, as we say in Perek Ezeo Mekoman. So I'm like, wow, what in heaven is going on over here? What does this mean even? Now, I thought this is going to be a 15-minute class, and we're like way into our time. There's an incredible rumination from the Rebbe on the precise language that Rashi uses to describe the kaporet, the cover of the ark. And the Rebbe says that Rashi suggests that the luchot are placed in the aron, and the kaporet is placed on the aron. The aron is the ark. That is to say, that the ark is called an ark even when it doesn't have the cover and the cherubim. The ark's purpose is to house the luchot. But the cherubim, the cover, the kaporet, has like a secondary purpose, or maybe even a primary purpose, which isn't simply to seal the box or cover the Decalogue, but rather to serve as the mechanism, as the sacred convention through which God communicates to the Jewish people. That was the satellite dish, for lack of better terminology, where Moses' prophecy was beamed off. I'm using that very euphemistically. In other words, kaporet is like this constant connection. There's like this connection radiating in the Holy of Holies. And that's what the kaporet represents. And incidentally, according to many, many of the commentaries, there were a golden cherubim, like a decal of golden cherubim on the back wall. Not on our own, but there was a depiction of the cherubim, a miraculous depiction of the cherubim on the back wall. And Titus, Yimach Shemo, when he came into the Holy of Holies, he saw these cherubim. In other words, even in the time of the second Beit HaMikdash, where we didn't have the overt Shekhinah, the presence of God, which is embodied, if you will, by the Luchot, we still had that constant connection. Think of a signal that's constantly beaming. What receives the signal? The answer is Beit HaKaporet. I would like to suggest to you that Beit HaKaporet is used purposely here because there is a constant, ongoing flow of divinity. Like a signal that's constantly being beamed, like you're watching me live or maybe later on watching a replay. That's because we're online right now. And if there wasn't a constant signal being beamed, you wouldn't see me or hear me now. It's continuous. So where was the Levite guarding? The Levite was guarding outside a little ventricle, a little tiny hole, because that wasn't just a vent. That was what enabled the connection of the Holy of Holies to permeate and saturate the back of the Beit HaMikdash as well. In other words, the Shekhinah is here. The Shekhinah radiates out the door. So the Shekhinah radiates out into the Azara. What about the back of the Azara? The answer is that the Shekhinah radiates out through the back as well, and the symbolic vent is, in effect, is its representation. You know, there's a very interesting halakha in the laws of ritual purity and impurity, which are entirely not tangible or physical. Yet, if you have a corpse in a body, and the doors and windows are sealed, and there's only one door where they're going to be removing the corpse from, then anybody who is in that doorway is going to become ritually impure because derech tum'ah latzet, because that energy has to exit somewhere. and it exits through that door. Meruba midatova. How much more so when we speak not of tuma, not of extraneous spirituality, but when we speak of the Shekhinah itself, it has to exit. So where does the Shekhinah exit from? The answer is the Shekhinah radiates out through these doors, through these curtains. How about the back? How about the Meiriv? There's a special vent that's made. And this is what I'd like to suggest, my friends. I'd like to suggest that Halacha Tess is talking about the Levites taking a position in a rather unusual way. Let me share with you the words of the Tiferes Yisrael. He says, what is the business of the Beit HaParochet? He says, by the way, Sham Orgim HaParochet, that's where there's constant activity there, they're weaving the curtains. And he says, I don't know where it is. Lo Yodati Mekoma. Nobody really knows where that chamber was. We don't know what its dimensions were. I'm going to assume it was quite large. We have some suggestions amongst some of the later commentaries as where it might be, but nobody knows with certainty. The Tiferes Yisrael himself says, maybe it was one of these chambers that surrounded the actual building of the Beis HaMikdash. But then, of course, the question is, if it was only one of the chambers, why would one chamber need to have a Levite guarding and none of the other chambers needed it? We're talking about a whole area of chambers on three sides. And if the Tiferes Yisrael suggested it might have been in here, then it might have been in here. Yet, why would that need to have a guard and the others not? This is like making my head explode. Something doesn't make sense here. Going on to the business of Beit HaKaporet. So the Tiferes Yisrael says, Shesham HaKaporet Munach Al Haron. That's where the cover is placed on the Aron, like Rashi says. The cover placed on the Aron. It's not a part of the Aron. It's separate and distinct from the Aron. By the way, it's a fantastic rumination from the Rebbe where he delves into a dispute between Rashi and Ramban about two other different areas and links them all together. It becomes one single continuum of vision and approach and understanding and appreciation of what the Kaporet's purpose is, from the images of the cherubim themselves, if they were angelic or childlike, to a variety of other things. And the Tiferes Yisrael says, "Venirali, seems to me, b'shum the ikir kedushat kodesh hakadashim, the main or overriding emphasis on the holy of holies, the sanctity of this inner sanctum is because rak. Sorry, I can't see. Because there is sham gilui hashchina, mideyesh sham gilui hashchina. Because there we find the revelation of divinity." They said, what does that mean? Kemoshe katuv, as it says, v'dibarte itach me'al hakaporet. God says, I communicate or connect with you me'al, from on top of the kaporet, as I told you a moment ago. Mishum hachi, that's why it's called Kodesh Kadashim Beit HaKaporet. But then the question is, Rabbi Tiferes Yisrael, why is it only called Beit HaKaporet here? If that's why it's called Beit HaKaporet, why do you and I know the language Kodesh HaKadashim? We're very familiar with that, but we're not familiar with the language of Beit HaKaporet. So here's my suggestion. This is what I stumbled upon. The only common denominator between these three very disparate kind of realities is that all of them represent constant or continuous activity that is not Beit HaMikdash-centric. In other words, the Har HaBayit is a Har HaBayit. It's a Temple Mount. It always has a certain sanctity. It's a constant. It is always the Har HaBayit. It's always God's mountain. Levites have to be there to mind the Har HaBayit. During the day, there's always people on the Har HaBayit. The Har HaBayit contains the Jewish judiciary, the Sanhedrin, and a minor Sanhedrin. There were a variety of other things that were going on over there. Things that were affected a range of religious and cultural life for Jewish people at the time. And the origin all emanated from Har HaBayit. And then at night, Har HaBayit goes quiet. Who's minding the Har HaBayit? The holiness is at the doors. From there it radiates out. Levites have to be at the doors from which the holiness radiates out, from which one is able to enter into the sacred space. The corners are what frame or keep the holiness in, if you will. So, for example, there's a law in the Halachot of Shabbat that when you have to create a private domain, you can create corners. There's a discussion of wells that were used at the time of Aliyah LeRegel when people would come up to the Beit HaMikdash and there were enormous throngs of pilgrims and people had to be hydrated. Animals had to be hydrated. And they would build these corners. And the corners became the area that kind of framed the scrimmage. So corners frame the scrimmage. And as such, we have to mind the corners. The doors, that's where the holiness radiates out from. It's what allows people to enter in. A Levi has to be there, but minding that very, very important nexus between the Har HaBayit and the outside world. We have to mind the corners, because the corners are what frame this sacred space. Okay, now we move into the Azara. Once again, here we have doorways, holiness radiating out, the possibility of people coming in as such, excuse me. We have to have shmira, mindfulness, at the doors and at the outside of the corners. And it's on the outside. Now, that's the doorways or gateways and corners. 18. Five doorways of Har HaBayit, minded by Levites. Four corners, the areas of scrimmage framing the Har HaBayit, Levites are present. Five doorways of the seven of Azara, Levites are minding. Four corners that frame the holiness, Levites are minding. Mindfulness achieved. Now says the Rambam, in a new halacha, the oid, and furthermore, in addition to what we discussed about doors and corners, all of which are common, and their commonality is not in the sacred nature, because the Har HaBayit and the inner sanctum are inherently disparate, but it's the same concept. A door is a door. A door to what? But it's still a door. A corner is a corner. It frames the holiness. It's the boundaries of the scrimmage of the holiness. It kind of boxes it in. Whatever holiness it is, Har HaBayit, the inner sanctum, the courtyard. But then we have three locations where there was constant activity during the day and it falls silent at night, and that can't be. You see, my friends, where there is constant activity, if it's constant activity during the day that constitutes the mindfulness, it can't be left alone at night. Where was there constant activity? Not where animals were laying. If animals were in a kennel or a pen, that's not constant activity. That's why we learned clearly. The Rosh tells us there was another chamber. It's not called Lishkat HaTlaim. It's not Lishkat HaTlaim is the place of lambs. This is Lishkat HaKorban. This is the place where they actually check the animal, ready the animal to become a korban. And the kohanim were busy there all day long. There was kohanim manning that little space, that little chamber, that little doctor's office. And then at night, the kohanim left. Who's minding that space where there's constant activity? The women are weaving curtains. There's always activity there. There are many, many offices, many chambers around the Holy of Holies. But many of them are just storage areas. And because they're storage areas, they don't need to be minded constantly, because they aren't minded constantly. There isn't always somebody there. But a place that always has a human presence, and human presence includes heart, mind, and soul, consciousness, at night it has to be minded. So when it comes to the Lishka, to the area of the Parochot, we have to have a Levi there. And last but not least, because the Kodesh HaKadoshim is not simply the holiest of places where once a year the Kohen Gadol will enter and perform his service. It is not simply the area that is the repository that houses the Luchot. It's the Beit HaKaporet. That's where there's a constant stream of divinity. That's where God's in touch with us, so to speak. There's a beaming of holiness continuously. There's a signal. On that area, we have to have mindfulness. Now, for the front of the area, so that's out this front door, we have already 9 Levites, or 9 groups of Levites, at 4 corners and at 5 doors, and Kohanim. And they're all, if you will, guarding this area from which the holiness emanates out. So the Azara is manned. Even the corners that frame the Azara. However, there is a little vent here in the back, and the little vent is used to beam divine presence out to the west side. And as the Rosh tells us, as such it becomes a door. Aha! It's a door! It's God's signal being broadcast! If it's divine presence being broadcast, what do you mean it's empty? What do you mean nobody's there? A Levite has to be stationed. And this, I don't know, I just stumbled on it. It's like incredible. Now everything makes sense. Now it makes sense why it says ve'od. The sum total of doors and corners is 18. End of story. For the variety of reasons, why they're inside, why they're outside, because Kohanim are in 2 of the places, it's done. But then Rambam says the Ode. He divides it into a separate halacha. The Mishnah doesn't divide it separately. Shomrim lishkat ha-korban, not lishkat ha-tlayim. Lishkat ha-parochet. The word lishka indicates that it is a place of activity, but not just any activity, constant activity. The lishkat ha-korban is where they were actually checking the animal, says the Rosh. The women are orgim, they're constantly busy. As the Rambam told us, that there are 13 continuous curtains that have to be worked on. And then achore beit kaporet, the back, as the Rosh so beautifully explains, because the Shekhinah is coming out the back, as the Tiferes Yisrael says. Not beit hakosh, not kodesh hakodeshim, hakaporet. And that kindly comes together. I'm going to take a look and see if your comments. So Nardia says, what a coincidence. The inner sanctuary suddenly looks like a metaphor for the human heart. Very good. 100%. I would agree with that. That's a beautiful comment. And Sof says, I don't think so because your world diversity. I don't know what you're talking about. Okay. I can't help you with that. Akoponim, at any rate, I think we have clarity now. At least, I don't know, I think I have clarity. And I hope this helps you too. For halacha tests, which by the way is one sentence. But this one sentence is packed full with such an incredible amount of meaning. And now we understand what the Levites are doing. And all of this I'm going to emphasize is based on the Rebbe's rumination at the beginning of Hilchos Beis HaBechira, which we spent quite a bit of time on elaborating on and explaining how it's all about the mindfulness. And now it all comes together. Anyway, I hope you like that. And I hope it's helped you understand more about the Beis HaMikdash and the function of the Levites. And may our mindfulness and our study about the Beit HaMikdash and its watch inspire a greater yearning for the restoration of the third Beis HaMikdash. B'mheira ubi'ameinu amen. Please like, please share. Please interact, and let's help get the metrics building so that more and more of us can learn about the building of the Beis HaMikdash, thereby accelerating its actualization with the coming of Mashiach b'mheira. Ubi amenu, amen. Thank you. Have a beautiful day.